Yeah. I don't even know what to say about this. what do I want to say? Yeah, that's great.
Hey, that's great, man.
Hey, that's great.
Welcome to the Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal industry. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. Well, to modify the quote from Field of Dreams, ask for it and they will come. That really applies to this week's episode because a couple of weeks ago we mentioned Bloomberg Law's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Framework, or their DEI framework, which is a survey they're doing, and we had suggested that they come on the show and talk more about it. And Molly Huey from Bloomberg Law, who is actually running the survey, reached out and said she'd be glad to be on the show. So she's going to join us this week and talk about what the mission is of the survey and how it differs and supplements other surveys and certifications currently in the industry.
Well, you know, that's really good to know that people are listening when we talk.
I'll stop looking at the stats.
So stick around for that interview, but now let's get to this week's Information Inspirations.
Well, I read this really interesting article from Reuters' Jenna Green this morning about Deckert's new innovation task force and their collaboration with a Silicon Valley design firm, IDEO. So Deckert is working on creating a human-centered design approach to the innovation program that they develop. And they're going to start with a 40-member team. The firm is around, I think they're around 700 lawyers. Mm-hmm. And the inaugural program will run from June to November. It's really interesting because there's going to be 48 hours of classroom instruction for this, plus an equal amount of independent project work for each of the members. So, you know, nearly 100 hours of work for each of the members. And the program itself is going to be divided into these four different parts. There's a creative problem-solving part along with a client-centric service delivery part. And both of those are going to be online programs by IDEO. And then the last two is there's an effective pricing and matter management technique and a digital literacy class, which both are going to be taught by guest lecturers. The interesting part, Marlene, is that the team members are expected to develop a creative solution to a real-life client or business challenge. We'll see how Deckert does with this because, you know, especially coming up with the, you know, real-life or business challenge to tackle. Because I think it could work if they have a real problem and work backwards to create a solution rather than what most of these programs do, which is come up with a really cool solution and then reach out and try and seek a problem that they can solve with that.
Well, I've been reading a lot about regulatory sandboxes lately. So Bob Ambrogi has been covering this for a while now, and I've also been chatting with our friend Kat Moon about it as well. And essentially what these sandboxes are safe places in which to explore new methods of delivering legal services. And specifically, the sandboxes are places where participants can look at how the existing system is hampering innovation and how to make that innovation happen. Bob recently reported about results from Utah sandboxes that allow legal advice on medical debt to be given by non-lawyers. The two programs are run by nonprofit groups and will train medical debt legal advocates to offer limited scope advice. I see this as similar to, say, a nurse practitioner in the medical field. And I think it's a great idea to address a real-life problem area that doesn't really have a lot of legal support.
All right, Marlene. So here's a riddle for you. So what happens when you combine a collection of mini hackathons and the concept of esports gaming?
Wow, I don't know.
All right, time's up.
It's like, you didn't give me a chance.
I know. what happens is you come up with something that NYU law professor Houman Shadib calls the no-code sports league. And these athletes compete in a live head-to-head competition and develop apps and solutions in real time.
Real time.
So there are four divisions that they compete in. There's the voice division, there's data and AI, full stack, and AR/VR divisions. And according to the website, the No Code Sports League welcomes competitors of all skill levels to compete for cash and demonstrate their no code building skills. Sign up to create a new match to challenge the competitor of your choice. Once No Code Sports confirms your time slot, you'll be good to get your game on. A 24-hour voting period follows each match, at which time the winner of the match is determined.
So, are you practicing?
Yeah.
And, for the voice section?
Yeah. Do you know what daisies you're on?
No.
Sunday.
I might have to check out that voice one. So the group Michigan Legal Help is doing some great work in the access to justice space. They put together an online do-it-yourself toolkit arranged by county about how to ask for an accommodation needed for court. The site is broken down with subject links such as articles for general information, common questions, and those actually have drop-downs, and a link for forms that you'll need to fill out for the various county courts. They also have information on finding a lawyer and community services. If you hit the hamburger menu, and by the way, I didn't even know what a hamburger menu was until about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They also have similar pages for things like money and debt and traffic crimes.
All right. Well, that wraps up this week's Information Inspirations. Law firms are constantly asked to fill out surveys for clients to explain diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts that are part of the firm's overall DEI efforts. Today's guest wants to unify these types of surveys and industry standards by creating a comprehensive survey that firms, corporations, and the overall industry can rely upon to know which firms are making a passing grade when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion.
We'd like to welcome Molly Huey, Team Lead, Data Analysis and Surveys at Bloomberg Law. Molly, welcome to the Geek and Review.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So we talked a couple of weeks ago about Bloomberg Law's new Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, or DEI, framework. And, you know, we're happy that you guys took us up on the offer to come on the show and talk more about the framework itself. Can you give us like a 30,000-foot overview of what the DEI framework is, and why did you and the folks there at Bloomberg Law decide to take this on?
Great. That's a great intro to the elevator pitch of this project. We've been thinking about this for 18 months, 2 years almost. We're seeing a problem in the industry where when firms go to bid for business at corporations, they are handed a supplier diversity questionnaire. And especially the bigger firms, they're getting dozens and dozens or even hundreds of these. And they're all just a little bit different. So if we could come in and give more of a standardized instrument, firms could give us their diversity data, we could score it, create a listing of firms that meet or exceed a standard, and share that with corporations so that, you know, we're not trying to supplant GC's own efforts in doing their due diligence and picking firms that are diverse from their criteria. But if we can give them a starting place and say, hey, look, here are firms that, you know, meet or exceed this level, that would fill a need in the industry.
So, Molly, how does the DEI framework compare to other projects out there like the Mansfield Rule, Inclusion Blueprint Score, or EDGE certification? What are you doing differently than what's already out there?
Well, I'm glad you asked that and that you've named some of the big ones in the field already. And these are our folks that we've talked to make sure that we're asking the right questions and we're including things that are important. We also spent a lot of time talking to the ABA about their model diversity survey. I see our DEI framework as almost the flip side of the coin for them because we're including a lot of the same information, but whereas the model diversity survey goes in with an anonymous promise, like they do a state of the industry report and then corporate signatories can pay in to see some of the data, what we're doing is saying, if you give us your data and you make the grade, we're going to publish it. And we want to celebrate firms that are doing it well. We want to put this out there. And I think by being not anonymous and public with it, we can really start raising awareness and helping move the needle.
So the firms themselves, if they do whatever the calculated score is that's passing or successful, then they can use this as a way of tooting their own horn or showing the industry that they have met the standards.
Exactly.
How's it different than, say, the Mansfield Rule itself?
Mansfield Rule focuses on getting diverse candidates in the door. They focus on the slate of interview candidates and hiring a diverse group. Ours goes past that and talks about recruitment, retention, leadership, top 10% most compensated attorneys. So we're really focusing on growing attorneys through the practice area because we feel like a lot of people are able to get a diverse first-year class in, but can they keep them?
So is it going to be just another type of ranking system like the YAMLAW 100 or, say, the U.S. News and World Report's law school ranking? Is it going to be a ranking
style? It is actually not going to be a ranking style. We're going to set a standard line, and anyone that meets or exceeds that standard will be published. We'll probably just do it alphabetically so it's easy to find. And we'll give firms that make the listing a press kit, a seal of approval. They'll be able to, like you said, toot their own horn, and we will as well.
Okay. And if the firms, say, don't make the cutoff, will you give them a list of things they can improve on?
So here's what we're planning. Every firm that submits data, we are going to give them a scorecard. We're going to say, here are the major areas we ask questions in. Kind of depending on how the data shake out, we would love to say, you know, here's what your score was in this area, and here's the averages for the entire industry or for firms that kind of look like you from a demographic standpoint. We are not in the business of coaching people how to necessarily improve. I would point them toward organizations like Diversity Lab to say these people can help you do things like on-ramping programs or whatnot to improve, but we're just telling you what the lay of the land looks like. But on that same note, we're not in the business of negative news. So if you, as a firm, submit data and don't make the listing, we're going to give you a scorecard, but we're not going to tell anybody you submitted data.
There are a lot of questions in the survey, like 84 possible questions from my count. How did you come up with the questions and how are they split into overall categories?
There are a lot of questions. It's a very comprehensive instrument, and that's what we're telling people as they look into it. Like, we are covering everything. We talked to a lot of people in the DEI space as we were developing this, spent a lot of time working with ABA's Racial and Ethnic Diversity Commission, and ended up getting a lot of the questions that have to do with just how many attorneys do you have that look like this? Those kind of questions are all mirrored from the Model Diversity Survey, which hopefully makes it a little easier for firms in filling it out that if they've already collected that data, they're halfway there. The rest of the questions are easier to answer because most of them are in a select one or select all that apply format. But what I was hearing from a lot of general counsel that we talked to is it's great to have the diversity numbers, but it's very important to have the policies and procedures in place that will help retain and promote diverse attorneys. So making sure we're asking about things like flex time and leave policies and alternative billing schedules, or even things like what other outside organizations the firm is promoting in the diversity space. These all feed into the categories. So we've got five major categories we're looking at: leadership and talent pipelines, recruitment and retention, business innovation and strategy, bias and harassment training, and then the last catch-all is the diverse brand. So what are they doing just kind of out there in the world?
So I'm just curious, how long did it take you to come up with these 84 questions and these categories? And were there things that you've left out on this survey that may make it in on a future survey?
Yes. And it took us about a year to develop the questionnaire. We worked, like I said, hard with ABA, but also with Bloomberg's Gender Equity Index team. And we took a lot of learnings from how they structured their questionnaire. One of the things that I wanted to include this year and didn't was a measure of neurodiversity, if firms are tracking that. And, it, you know, I floated the idea and not a whole lot of people had heard of it when I started talking about it a year ago. And now all of a sudden it's in the news. So I would expect to be able to include even a, are you measuring this kind of option about that in coming years.
Yeah, yeah. Many parents like myself have heard of it.
Yes. Yes, we have.
Exactly.
Well, you kind of answered my next question about whether the survey is going to be a one-time thing or if you're going to continue it. So it sounds like you are going to continue it. So how often are you wanting to continue the survey?
I would love to do this as an annual effort. I feel like we're getting started almost a little late in 2021, asking folks to give us all their data from the 2020 year. So my hope is that we collect data all summer, we have a big celebration of firms that make the listing in Q4, which also ramps up for next year's version. And so we let people close their books on 2021. And then in Q1 next year, we'll say, okay, now submit us that data. And we'll recertify firms every year.
And how are you asking the firms to submit the data? And what's kind of the time frame? When do they need to get it in?
We're leaving the data collection open through the end of August this year. I have an online portal set up. So we have an external facing website that has all the project information, the FAQs, a link to all the survey questions. And on there is a link to submit your data. And what that will take firms to is a contact form. So when you fill out a contact form, I'll get an alert and then I'll send a personalized link to our secure access portal. And then firms will be able to go in and out of that portal and put their data in through the end of August.
And if they have questions, say they're confused on some of that, do they reach out?
They can reach out to me directly. Yep. They can reach out to me directly. Or we also have a DEI_framework@BloombergIndustry.com that they can reach out to.
Oh, great. And you work, what, 20 hours a day for this?
At least. and happily, because I'm so excited about this project.
Great, great. Well, you know, as I was looking through the questions themselves, I mean, you're asking for a lot of details that I don't think a lot of firms are necessarily asking their lawyers or staff currently, such as racial identity, gender identity, LGBTQ plus status, if you're a veteran, any of those. So how accurate do you think the results can be given that there's this potential limited data?
First off, I'll say that none of the questions are required. So as you get into the data collection portal and you're going in to put in your data, firms can skip whatever they want. So the more data they give, the more we have to use to score them with. But that said, some of this, I think, is awareness building that, once we start asking questions, then people may start measuring, then we may start getting data. So unless somebody pokes at it, it's never going to change. And so we may only get a limited number of data the first couple of years, but as we keep poking, people may start measuring.
Do you think that firms will need to start collecting this type of data? And if they do, what do you think that the reaction is going to be from their attorneys and staff for asking this type of information?
I don't know. I think it would be positive. There are some things that I'm sure if people don't want to disclose, I'm not sure that firms could make them. But I think sometimes making it a safe space and saying, hey, look, we're trying to understand what the makeup of our firm is, racially, ethnically, sexual orientation, or gender identity. And if we know, we can help. Yeah, that may be an optimistic and rosy view, but hopefully.
How are you handling the sensitivity of the data you'll be collecting? How are firms identified or not identified in the survey results? If firms aren't identified, then does that reduce the effectiveness of the survey?
The point of this one is not to be anonymous, to really be public and be out there with the listing of firms that meet or exceed the standard of diversity. So I think that will help move the needle by naming those firms that are doing it right. In terms of the security of the data, it is really sensitive data. We use a third-party platform called Qualtrics that does the survey hosting. And when we pull the data from there, it's kept on secure servers at our Bloomberg offices, and only the analysts on my team have access to that. We will keep the data because I would like to be able to do year-over-year scoring for firms. So if a firm submits data this year and doesn't make the framework listing, I'll still have that data and they'll still get a scorecard so they can look at the areas where they'd like to improve, submit data again next year, and we'll be able to build in some kind of credit or progress score as firms make improvements.
All right. Well, once you've worked through the summer and August has come and gone and the survey closes, how are you going to analyze the information? And when do you estimate that, you know, you're going to release the survey results?
We're hoping to be able to release the results in hopefully early Q4. My goal is as firms start putting their data in, like hopefully we'll have, you know, chunks of firms put data in before the August deadline so we can start really building our metrics, you know, and all the coding that goes on behind it before the survey actually closes. Once we get the whole thing, I have a group of people that I've been talking to, industry leaders, general counsel, you know, some people in academia, so that what I want to happen is I'm going to develop the scoring metric and say, hey, look, this is how I've scored things. And if I do it this way, these are the firms that make the list. Does that make sense to you? Because I don't want to be doing this in a vacuum. This is too important. So getting a cohort of people that are really known and respected in the space to say, yeah, that makes sense. Let's do it this way. And then the idea is every year, hopefully the bar will raise as people and firms start doing a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. Every year we'll tweak it.
I mean, and it sounds like, you know, once people see the results and see, you know, who is listed, it's going to be, you know, fear of missing out, right?
I hope
you know,
so.
Everyone's going to want to be on the list.
I really hope so. I'm hoping that this will get to be a standard in firms' kind of yearly disclosure practices. And I'm really hoping that it makes their lives easier. Like, this is a really comprehensive survey instrument. Once they have all this data done, hopefully they can just give it to some corporations and say, hey, look, we've made Bloomberg's list. Is this good enough? But also they've already collected all this data. Even if they have to plug it into mm-hmm. some other survey documents,
right,
it should still make their lives easier.
What kind of reaction so far have you gotten from both firms and from corporations on Bloomberg Law taking up the survey?
Really positive. I've been really happy to find that everyone that I've talked to that's in this space is helpful of everybody else who's in this space. Like they're like, oh yeah, that's great. Jump right on. Or here's a little hole. Here's how you could fill it. I feel like all the other kind of major players in this space are doing things a little bit differently and all have value. So we're all working together. One thing that I did hear from several general counsel is that they'd love to be able to dig deeper into the data. So, you know, knowing a firm made the list is great, but you know, they want to pick it apart themselves, if you will. And I would love to be able to do that. That is not something that we said that we were going to do with data this year. Perhaps as we collect more data and it becomes a standard part of firms' disclosures, like maybe we will be able to build some kind of way for people to dig around and play with it. But that's not in this year's agenda.
Well, Molly Huey, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us about Bloomberg Law's new DEI framework. I for one, am really looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, thank you, Molly.
You are welcome. I would love to talk to you about it again once the results are live.
That sounds
great.
Well,
I think we will.
Fantastic.
So Marlene, I'm thinking that the DEI framework has some pretty good potential here. I really like that Molly mentioned that someone needs to start poking law firms to start gathering these data points. And it seems that, you know, if anybody's going to do it, Bloomberg Law has enough clout behind it to be the one doing the poking.
Yeah, I like this idea. I have some concern, again, regarding the depth, not that the depth is bad, but is that going to scare firms off? But, you know, the good thing is, you know, Bloomberg, as you mentioned, Bloomberg does have some clout. And also, I like the idea of sort of publishing those that have sort of completed this. And that way, again, you kind of have that fear of missing out. And like, you know, well, we got to get our name on there, too. So there's a bit of a nudge in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we said in other conversations, you really can't see progress on things you don't measure. And, you know, you got to start somewhere when it comes to measuring advancements in DEI within law firms. Well, thanks again to Molly Huey from Bloomberg Law for coming on the podcast and discussing the new Bloomberg Law DEI framework. So I'm going to put some links in for the survey invitation on the show notes. And as we said a few weeks ago, this survey is thick. So don't wait too long about starting to fill it out. But before we go, we want to remind listeners to take the time to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and take the time to rate and review us as well. If you have any comments about today's show or suggestions for a future show, you can reach out to us on Twitter at GabeBauerM or at Glambert. You can call the Geek and Review hotline at 713-487-7270, or you can email us at geekandreviewpodcast@gmail.com.
And as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thanks, Jerry.
All right. Thank you very much, Jerry. And I will talk to you later, Marlene.
Okay. See you soon.